Hi again, everyone. This is Mark Movsesian. I'm the director of the Center for Law and Religion here at the St. John's University School of Law. I'm joined once more by my friend and colleague, Mark DiGirolami, who's the center's associate director, for another episode of Legal Spirits, which is our podcast series on issues and cases in law and religion. You can find past episodes of the series on iTunes or also at our website, lawandreligionforum.org. That's one word, lawandreligionforum.org. Okay, Mark. Well, today we're going to do the first of two episodes on religious hate speech in American law. This is a subject that's very much in the news. Recently, the House of Representatives passed a resolution condemning anti-Semitism and also anti-Muslim bigotry. There is a pending bill in the Florida legislature that would prohibit speech that makes dehumanizing or stereotypical allegations about the Jewish community, or that compares Israeli policy with those of Nazi Germany. And then there are other episodes of this too, right, Mark?
Yeah, there's San Antonio has recently banned Chick-fil-A from setting up a store in the San Antonio airport because of Chick-fil-A's alleged contributions to and support for anti-LGBT causes, which views are presumably ostensibly derived from the people who are in charge of Chick-fil-A, their religious beliefs about these matters. There is abroad, we find other, in fact, probably stronger kinds of regulations of hate speech. I think that's probably one of the things that we'll talk about, are the differences between the United States and other countries. But in New Zealand, for example, with respect to the recent catastrophe that happened in Christchurch, New Zealand has banned the statement of the gunman who killed 49 Muslims at a mosque in Christchurch, and this document encourages murder and violence against Muslims and identifies specific locations that are to be attacked. The document was banned. So this is, again, a kind of a move by government, in this case the New Zealand government, to ban a certain kind of hate speech.
Right. So this idea that there is certain speech which expresses hatred toward religion, the idea that this can be prohibited or banned is something that is very much in the air right now in the United States and elsewhere. And so we thought it would be a useful time to consider how our law deals with the problem of anti-religious hate speech and what some of the issues are. So, Mark, when we get into the topic of religious hate speech, I think it's useful to break the topic down into some smaller subcategories, because when we talk about hate speech directed at religion, we're really talking about three distinct categories of expression, only one of which is controversial in the United States at the moment. I mean, should point out there are plenty of places in the world where it's not at all controversial to regulate religious hate speech, for example, in some Muslim-majority countries. But we're limiting our talk today to the United States and maybe some Western countries if we can get to them. Okay, but really there are, it seems to me, three categories that you need to separate when you talk about the subject. The first category of religious hate speech would be speech that is critical of or insulting to religious beliefs as such. So people denigrating certain religious convictions or mocking certain religious personages, expressing disrespect towards God. This is one category. We'd think of this traditionally as blasphemy.
Yeah, that's right. And in the United States, blasphemy laws have been unconstitutional since the 1950s. The Supreme Court has held them unconstitutional. And I don't think, at least in the United States and abroad, there are controversies involving anti-blasphemy provisions that are still on the books and that have caused controversy in recent years. But in the United States, it doesn't seem to me that there's really any live controversy about reviving anti-blasphemy laws.
No, I agree with that. I don't see much of a movement to reimpose restrictions on blasphemy. I do want to point out, though, just to let our listeners know that some European countries, we consider these Western liberal democracies, some of them have maintained blasphemy laws even today. Now, enforcement is spotty, and the trend is against these laws. For example, Denmark and the Netherlands only in the last few years have abolished their blasphemy laws. But I think it's worth pointing out to our listeners that there are Western liberal democracies that continue to have them.
Yeah, and I think if one thinks about those Western democracies and one thinks what their regimes might look like, I think presumably, and I think it is true, that those that continue to maintain them and to enforce them to the extent that they enforce them look to see whether there is some sufficiently weighty consideration or concern on the other side of the equation, some state interest of sufficient gravity to justify outlawing certain kinds of speech about religion as hateful.
Yeah, and oftentimes that is expressed in terms of the need to avoid gratuitous insult to the religious feelings of citizens. Sometimes it's justified as a means of maintaining public order in situations where blasphemy might encourage public violence. But we don't have them in this country, and as Mark says, I don't think there's much interest in reviving them.
Yeah, and I should add one other thing. We're mixing together two things which conceptually I think can be mixed, but we can identify them as different. One is speech about religion that is hateful. A second is religious speech that is itself hateful.
Yes, often the same.
Often the same, and often the same for purposes of regulation also. In other words, a particular regulation could target the same kinds of things, but we're going to be encompassing both of those kinds of ideas within the legal and cultural overview that we're talking about.
Right. Right, good. Okay, so that's one category, speech that is critical of or insulting to religious beliefs. The second category is speech that threatens imminent violence or that is inciting imminent violence against persons on the basis of their religion or their perceived religion. In the United States, actually, the state can criminalize incitement or threats of imminent violence on the basis of the victim's religious belief. The case is called Brandenburg. It goes back quite a long way. And most other countries have similar laws that ban incitement or threats of imminent violence.
Yeah, and I think Brandenburg is the incitement case. One can think of a more direct kind of example that doesn't involve incitement, that is simply a threat. You know, I'm going to punch you in the nose because you're Jewish is just as regulable by the government as I'm going to punch you in the nose for any other reason. So the fact that there's a religious component to the speech doesn't make it any more or less regulable. It's just simply the kind of speech with or without religion involved that is excluded from First Amendment protection.
Good. Okay. And so neither of those first two categories is controversial. Neither, you know, saying that we cannot ban speech that insults religion or saying that we can ban speech that threatens imminent violence on the basis of religion. That's not controversial. However, there is a third category, and this one is controversial. And the third category of religious hate speech is speech that disparages or insults religious believers on the basis of their beliefs or their perceived beliefs. So this is not the same as category one, because here the disparagement is of believers, not the beliefs themselves. And it's also not category two, because there's no threat of imminent violence against persons. Nonetheless, speech in category three, that is speech that disparages or insults religious believers, that can cause grave offense, that kind of speech. And it can lead over time to social discrimination, to opprobrium, and even to violence. And it's this third category, Mark, that is beginning to become controversial in the U.S.
Yeah, and so that's the category we're going to talk about. We'll talk about it in the United States primarily. And I think, you know, we can talk about other, you know, European contexts. We can note that the United Nations Human Rights Council, with U.S. support, condemns religious hate speech that constitutes, quote, incitement to discrimination, hostility, or violence against religious believers.
Yes, right? And yeah, that's very good, Mark. That's a good point. And I should point out again for our listeners that this was a Western victory. This was a victory for the U.S. because before the most recent resolution, the U.N. Human Rights Council had been debating resolutions that would condemn defamation of religion, that is Category 1 speech. And the United States and Western democracies were always very opposed to this resolution. And the compromise was to pass a resolution that prohibits the incitement to discrimination or violence against believers. So this was considered a victory for us.
Okay, so that's the international context, but maybe we can start out with some basic United States domestic principles of free speech law. And,
yeah.
And so let's start with those, Mark, I think.
Good.
And when we start with those, I think the baseline that we're working from is that right now there is no hate speech exception to the First Amendment. Hate speech is, as such, hate speech is fully protected.
And I should say that oftentimes our students don't recognize this. When I mention this in my law and religion class, and I say, well, you know, hate speech as such is fully protected. There is no hate speech exception to the First Amendment. Sometimes they're quite surprised by that.
Yeah, no, that happens in my class as well. When in constitutional law, when we get to the First Amendment by the end of the course, you know, the hate speech is something that a lot of students want to talk about. And I think some students even think that perhaps some hate speech ought to be protected. So they are surprised. Ought to be prohibited. Exactly. Ought not to be protected. And so they are surprised to learn about this. Sometimes they ask about hate crime, and I think it's useful for our listeners to understand the difference there. Hate crime, that is augmented punishments for the sort of expressive conduct that is already outside of First Amendment protection, is permissible. Why? Well, because we're already dealing with a kind of Category 2 situation. We're already dealing with the kind of expressive conduct that is physically injurious, or that is vandalism or something like that, that isn't protected by the First Amendment. And it's clear based on a case called Wisconsin versus Mitchell, where a black man urged friends of his to beat up a white boy because he was white. Wisconsin made that offense aggravated, and the Supreme Court said, no, that's okay, because we're dealing as an initial matter with a kind of activity that isn't First Amendment protected.
Okay, so good, Mark. So the key point is that under existing law in the United States, a move to prohibit certain kinds of speech, that is religious hate speech, in the absence of a threat of imminent violence, such a move would be unconstitutional. And I guess there are a couple of cases that are relevant here. One is Snyder against Phelps, and then there's another case too. So why don't you tell us about those cases?
Yeah, well, so the other case I'll start with, because it's the more recent case, is called Mittal versus Tam. And this was a case decided actually, I guess it's two terms ago was decided. This was a case concerning a trademark denial to a group that wanted the mark for a rock group called The Slants. And so just one note here, this wasn't even a case where the government was prohibiting the group from using the name altogether. It was just withholding a benefit, a trademark, as to a name that the government considered to be racist, and under the terms of the regulation issue was deemed by the government to be disparaging. That was the language, and in an 8-0 decision striking the provision down as discriminating on the basis of viewpoint, the court said, no, you can't do that. The language here is, quote, "We protect the freedom to express the thought we hate," close quote. So you can't get any clearer statement from the Supreme Court that hateful thoughts, thoughts that we consider hateful as such, are protected by the First Amendment. And they're protected not just in the sense that the government can't prohibit you from speaking in that way, but in the sense that the government can't withhold a benefit from you that it otherwise might want to on the basis that it considers the phrase or the speech disparaging or hateful.
Right. And actually, Mark, the court is going to hear argument next month in a similar case involving the Lanham Act about scandalous material. And, well, of course, we'll have to see what the court says about that. But if this other case you've talked about, the Tam case, is any indication, they'll probably say that a ban against scandalous marks may also have constitutional problems.
I think so. I think if the signs point in the way that they look like they're pointing, this is going to be another loss for the government. In fact, it was somewhat unusual for the government for the court to take such a similar case in light of the fact that it had just taken Mittal versus Tam. I think this is a very speech protective court.
Although you're the free speech expert, not I, but there is already an exception for obscenity, and I wonder if the scandalous material might fit under that exception.
Yes, although, well, so I think there is such an exception, but generally that kind of speech is characterized quite narrowly as going to or involving something involving the prurient interest. Mm-hmm. And that's not really the kind of speech, it's not sort of speech that is intended to be sexually arousing in that way. There's a special carve out, a special set of additional doctrines involving speech of that kind. The Miller case is the important case there. But really here we're not dealing with that. We're just talking about speech that the government doesn't like, but not for those kinds of reasons, for the reasons that it considers to be racist, offensive, or otherwise problematic.
I see. And the other case was Snyder versus Phelps, which is the Westboro Baptist case about a protest at a funeral of a soldier in which the Westboro Baptist Church came and picketed and, you know, had signs, all sorts of hurtful signs that were clearly inflicting emotional distress on the family. And the court said that that could not constitutionally be banned either. Now, of course, this isn't exactly the same as hate speech. Neither of these two opinions is exactly on the question of hate speech. But they do suggest that, at least for now, the Supreme Court is likely to be very reluctant to say that religious hate speech as such, that is Category 3 speech, could be banned.
Yeah, I think that's true. This doesn't seem to be a court as presently constituted that is especially interested in rolling back protections on free speech or carving out some sort of special category of hate speech. They have come out quite strongly, and they've come out not just strongly, but if not unanimously, in fairly lopsided judgments, lopsided votes on the question. So in order for our conversation to get going at all, we would have to imagine that there would be some kind of movement on the court that way. Now, we could either imagine that, or we could also imagine, actually probably more probably, that the issue doesn't get to the court in the first place. In other words, that some actors out there will imagine that they can get away with a certain amount of regulation of hate speech and evade Supreme Court review.
Okay, so let's talk about this more, because even though the court at the moment seems unlikely to say that there is an exception for hate speech to the First Amendment, there does seem to be increasing interest in society at large in regulating speech in Category 3, that is, speech that expresses a hostility to religious believers or insults them on the basis of their religious belief. There's that Florida bill we talked about. There is the San Antonio issue in which the city of San Antonio has banned Chick-fil-A, which is a fast food restaurant, from operating in the San Antonio airport because of the positions that Chick-fil-A's management has taken about LGBT issues. Public universities sometimes have hate speech codes that ban offensive speech. So it's not entirely academic, and, you know, eventually the law tends to respond to these movements. So I wonder if we should talk a little bit, Mark, about, well, what might happen if a state did try to ban religious hate speech in Category 3, that is, speech that disparages or insults religious believers or a religious believer, a single religious believer, on the basis of religious beliefs. What are some of the issues that would come up with such a ban?
Yeah, so I think we can think in terms of a number of line-drawing problems that would arise if a government entity were to do this, and actually are arising when government entities try to do this, because as I say, it's certainly possible to get a more speech-restrictive or a judge that is more inclined to be speech restrictive at the lower courts or in the lower courts than one might get at the Supreme Court. It takes a long time for cases to work their way through the system. There are always cost-benefit analysis that have to be undertaken when people decide whether or not to sue. So it seems to me that government entities can, at present, get away with banning a certain amount of what they consider to be hate speech while evading the kinds of legal principles that we've been talking about now. So
yeah, that's a nice point, Mark. There is some of that can go on. I mean, this might go on, never reach the courts for one reason or another.
Sure, we can think about an analogy with respect to, for example, the prayer in schools cases of the 1960s, where the Supreme Court came out and announced all of these principles. You can't do that. You can't have prayers in schools. Devotional exercises are out. And actually, I think that there evidence is in that many school districts in various parts of the country have just proceeded right along, continuing with their own religious exercises, just as they always have.
Yeah, that's actually an example that's often given for the impotence of the court really to move against public opinion. And we should point out, one of our earlier episodes actually discussed an example of prayer. Well, we had two of them. One was prayer at a school board meeting, and one was prayer after a high school football game. So these issues still come up. Okay, well, now, Mark, you say line-drawing problems. So one line-drawing problem that might come up is, how do we know whether the criticism is about the religious belief or the religious believers? In other words, is religion best understood as a system of ideas, or is it understood more as a communal identity? If it's the first, then, well, that's Category 1 speech. That can't be banned. If it's the second, if religion is understood not really as a set of ideas, but actually as a kind of group identity, then we're in category three. And where to draw the line between those two is not so clear.
I think that's right. And it hasn't been clear to the court also. So the question whether religion is an individual or a communal experience, activity, the court's been a little bit all over the map on this question. In cases like Thomas versus Review Board from the 1980s.
Early 80s.
Mm-hmm. The court seemed to take the position that religion is about individual belief and commitment, even so far as to say that religion is about those beliefs and commitments when they run directly contrary to the beliefs and commitments of the larger community.
Right. And the court has been very clear for quite some time that it's always permissible to critique religious beliefs. And so if Category 3 came to be seen as a way to evade that and to allow the state to clamp down on critique of religious belief because it might offend some religious believer, then I think that'd be a big problem. On the other hand, the court recently, in a case called Trinity Lutheran versus Comer, this is a case from just a couple of years ago about a church that wanted to participate in a public benefits program, the court talked about religion as though it were a status, not really a set of beliefs. You know, that you couldn't deny a religious institution government benefits because it was a religious institution, that is, on the basis of its status. And if the court comes to see religion not so much as a series of beliefs, but more as a kind of identity, well, then the door really is open to start clamping down on speech that is insulting to the identity.
I think that's right. And there were some interesting The opinions were interesting in that case, going in different directions. If you remember, you had Justice Gorsuch, who actually took issue with the idea that religion is a status or an identity, or at the very least that if it is a status or an identity, it can't be separated out from the particular beliefs and commitments that support that identity.
Yeah, and actually we're going a little far afield here, but it seems to me one thing you might want to think about is, in the real world, religion is typically both. It is typically a set of beliefs that you assent to, but it's also an identity. It is not simply an abstract thing. You know, it's not just propositions. It's also very much part of the believer's emotional makeup and sense of self.
Okay, so that's one, just to bring things, to reel things back into what we're talking about, that's one set of problems that will happen, that are sure to happen once a state or a government decides that it wants to regulate hate speech, because if it's floating into category one, what we described as category one, then that's going to be clearly problematic from a First Amendment point of view. But in some ways, it will inevitably float into category one if the sorts of problems that we're talking about are real.
Yeah, and frankly, in a pluralistic society like ours, views are going to differ about that. Views will differ about what religion genuinely is, you know? And so there are, okay, there are a lot of problems with that. So what are some other lines?
Okay, so here's a second line drawing problem, and that is just on the substance. What counts as an objectionable critique? What is the sort of disparagement that should be outlawed? As again, as I say, Mattal versus Tam, this case about the slants, took the view that we just can't trust the government to make these determinations. In fact, the slants wanted to adopt that name ostensibly not for disparagement purposes, but to reclaim it or to give it dignity or something like that. And if we're going to allow more regulation, just as you said before, we're going to run into these questions of, well, who's making the two questions. Number one, what is disparagement? What really counts as disparagement? And two, who gets to make the determination about what counts?
Right. And again, we have to keep in mind that the court has been very clear that a state cannot ban critique of a religion. And so if, you know, you start saying that, well, this isn't really an objective critique, this is disparagement, and therefore this can be banned, then you really run into some trouble, I think, under the court's precedence.
Right. Okay. So that's a second kind of problem that a government will run into in outlawing or in regulating hate speech. A third kind involves the question of what's the line between legitimate debate about a particular question and illegitimate or off-the-table sorts of debate. So if we punish certain kinds of speech, we're saying that's just not the kind of speech that belongs in civilized society, right? We don't tolerate it. Again, number one, how do we know which kind of speech is in that category? And number two, who should decide?
And right, Mark, and so all of these line-drawing problems that we've identified lead to yet another problem that comes up here, and that is the potential for a chilling effect on public debate. And what do I mean by that? The very fact that it's so difficult to draw a line between what would be objective and constitutional criticism and what would be disparagement and therefore unconstitutional, assuming we go down this route, the very fact that it's so hard to draw those lines might well lead people simply to avoid the topic altogether. So if I'm a private citizen, if I'm Chick-fil-A, for example, or if I'm just somebody who wants to make a statement about something that seems close to the line, I might decide it's better saying nothing at all. Because even if I'm sued and 5 years later a court tells me I had a right to say what I want to say, for the next 5 years my life is going to be terrible, my business may be gone, I just want to avoid the subject altogether. Which would mean that a proposed ban on speech that insults religious believers could have the effect of shutting down public debate with respect to unpopular beliefs or unpopular statements about religion.
Yeah, and that hasn't been our tradition. That has not been our tradition in this country. That our tradition has been that in order to avoid these problems about chilling speech, we don't have official censors or people in authority making these kinds of decisions, because by and large, we have decided that it's more important to allow this kind of speech rather than the alternative, which is to chill it, to prevent it from happening. Other countries, we mentioned New Zealand at the beginning of the podcast, have made different choices. New Zealand has a quote-unquote chief censor who pronounces on these kinds of questions. We don't have such an official person. That's not to say that we don't have any norms. When it comes to speech itself, they tend to be private norms. Well, this is the topic that we're going to talk about actually in our next podcast, is the private side of all of this. But now we're talking about the public side, the government side. And as I say, for exactly the sorts of problems that you have identified, we don't tend to entrust these sorts of decisions to the government.
Now, was this always the case, Mark? Was our law of free speech always as libertarian as it is today? I mean, my impression is it was not at one point.
That's true. I've written a paper, at least in part, about this. Thank you for asking about it.
Hypothetically, I was wondering.
In the early republic, in fact, the state was empowered to regulate many more kinds of speech than it is today. So there's no conceptual impediment to returning to a more regulation-heavy approach, though it's likely that the sorts of regulation we'd impose today would differ dramatically from the kinds of regulation that was accepted in the 18th and 19th century. You'd have to undo a lot of Supreme Court doctrine, but the Supreme Court can do that. So there's no reason that we couldn't, and perhaps over time we will return to that approach. It's just not the approach that we've taken over the last short time.
Right. It would be a major change. So, okay, so what we've done today is we've talked about the constitutional limits with regard to state action against people who disparage religion, engage in religious hate speech. But a lot of the action on the ground has to do not so much with official state action, but actually what you said a moment ago, private norms against saying certain things, or private entities which adopt speech codes or things like this. And these raise a different set of issues, but we're out of time for today. So in our next episode, we're going to take up the question of what you might call private enforcement of certain hate speech regulation. So I hope you'll join us then. Until then, again, this is Mark Movsesian, the director of the Center for Law and Religion, with my colleague and friend Mark DiGirolami. This has been another episode of Legal Spirits. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can follow us on iTunes, or you can go to our website, lawandreligionforum.org. Look forward to next time.